office. We appreciate him being here and taking part in this process as well. One of the things that all of you know, we all have our own ideas about what's best, and we're inviting you and hoping that you'll express your ideas about what ought to be done. We'd invite you to procedurally, we will normally start with a question period. We'll have a presentation by a board member, or not a board member, but a division personnel. Normally this will take anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes. They'll explain what the proposal is, what the division's proposal is, and then at that point in time we'll have any questions. There'll be a question period for the rec, and then we'll open it up to the audience for questions. At that time, it's for questions. Okay, then we will close that, and then we'll open a comment period. And at that point in time, anybody in the audience that has a comment or wishes to state something that's pertinent to what we're being talked about or what the proposal is, that would be the time to do that. We have comment cards back there as you come in, and we'll need you to fill out one of these cards and put your name, and then when you're talking, state your name and either the organization you're representing or if you're speaking for yourself. If you're speaking on behalf of an organization, you'll be given 5 minutes. If you're speaking on behalf of yourself, you'll be given 3 minutes, and we'll try and hold tightly to those time restrictions. Another thing we'd ask is we all are passionate about the way we feel about things that should happen with animals, and we'd ask you to please respect each other. Respect each other's opinions and hear them out. Also, listen carefully to what's being said so that if somebody, the guy before you, says the same thing you were going to say, you can just agree with them. Once we get done with the comment period from the audience, we'll bring it back to the RAC committee, and we will actually have talk about it, propose a motion. At that point in time, we'll vote on it. And as you know, from then, how this committee votes goes forward to the board meeting, and then they're the ones that have the final decision. Before we get going on the regular part, we need to get a chance to look at the agenda. I'll entertain a motion to accept the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as printed.
Okay, a motion's been made by George. Danny, he's got a second. All in favor? Motion passes unanimously. Wildlife Board meeting update. Last time was a pretty busy time on the Wildlife Board for those. So I know some of you were there, and there was approximately 15 items on the agenda, and by the time we hit noon, we were through the first two. So it was a spirited and lively discussion. There was quite a few that happened. They had the fee schedule. It was proposed. Okay, we'll come back. All right, thanks. They would propose the fee schedule. It was moved and seconded and then passed with a 4-2 margin. They also talked about the cougar management plan. The one thing, there was an amendment in the motion for the fee schedule, and that was for the ewe sheep. And that was to have the non-resident go from $300 to $1,000, and that one passed. Cougar management plan revisions for 215 also passed 4-2. There was a motion on the fur bearers one, an amendment on it to extend the season by 1 week. That one also passed, and then the remainder of the fur bear harvest recommendation was also passed. There was quite a bit of discussion about the price of tags. The new turkey depredation rule also was brought forward and was passed, and that turkey transplant. And they also, towards the end of it, they've been trying to do a big restoration project down on Monroe, and the Forest Service was seeking the endorsement of the Wildlife Board on their project for habitat restoration and the Aspen, I can't remember what they called it, Aspen regeneration project, and looked at the letter, and they decided that they would craft it a little bit differently, and so they left and changed the wording and stuff to where the Forest Service didn't actually were supporting the idea to go along with it, but still retain the ability to manage the animals that were there. And so I thought that was an excellent change. Then there was a couple of motions on the deer management plan, which was a central region specific. It was moved and seconded, and that also passed. The conservation permit, first off, they had the audit. They went through the audit and talked about how much money, what the money was for, how it was allocated, what the rules were for it. And then that was accepted and passed. Then they made a motion to allot the permits as they had in the past, and that motion passed as well. Before we go any further, though, we need to have a motion to accept the agenda. I mean, the minutes from the last meeting. Y'all had a chance to read them. Is there any corrections or additions that need to be made to the minutes? None? Okay, I'll entertain a motion. Larry makes a motion that we accept the minutes. Seconded by Richard. All in favor? Motion passes. Next, we will have an informational update from the regional update by John Fairchild.
Okay, we're going to start off with aquatics, since most of you here are concerned about fish tonight. Mike, let me know if there's something you want to add. But we had a really good turnout, a lot of those were interested in the Mill Creek Restoration Project, a lot of Trout Unlimited and other individuals, groups were involved, and that happened this last week. So the second phase of that Mill Creek Restoration Project took place later on in October. The upper section of that stream will get stocked with Bonneville cutthroat trout. Got one more year, actually two more years, but the big project will be next year when the lower almost half or third of the project is taken on. Jackie Watson was selected to fill the sport fish biologist position, so that's kind of a personnel update. Along with that Mill Creek project, there will be a culvert replacement project done by the Forest Service in the upper section of the canyon, and that will close access to the end of the road on the 22nd of September, and I believe it goes for 3 weeks to a month. It will disrupt a little bit the extended archery hunting that takes place at that upper end of the canyon. You can still go in on horseback or hiking, but won't be able to drive to the end of the road. Gill Netting, Deer Creek, and Jordanelle Reservoir in October, I believe the 7th and 8th. Also Gill Netting, Yuba Reservoir on the 30th of October. Main Creek Restoration up by Wallsburg. There'll be a volunteer opportunity to plant willows on September 19th and 22nd, maybe also the 23rd, and Chris Crockett is the one that's leading that charge. So get with him if you're interested. In our wildlife section, Unit 17, which is the Wasatch unit, will be added to CWD sampling this year for both deer and elk. We have completed plans for Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep and Rocky Mountain goat management in the region. Those will be presented at the November RAC and December Wildlife Board meetings. What's being proposed is a transplant of Rocky Mountain goats on the Deep Creek Mountains. We'll be getting with the Goshute Tribe and BLM to review those plans, and then also a transplant on the south end of the Sandpitch Mountains for pronghorn antelope in Antelope Flat. Urban deer control update within the wildlife section. Highland City is going to proceed with the second year of their pilot program. It was very successful. They harvested 74 deer the first year, and they didn't make the news. So I'd say that was highly successful. They made the news 6 months later when people found out it was taking place. So Harriman City, working with landowners to utilize depredation permits to reduce deer numbers on ag lands, and that's just archery only. That'll take place this fall. Mapleton City, similar, They're going to be working with landowners to accept depredation permits with and take deer on their agricultural lands, and that's going to be we're trying to get landowner associations so that anyone with a permit can go on any lands that are ag lands that are participating. Vernon, believe it or not, they have their own set of deer problems in town, and they're going to be harvesting with mitigation permits. Other cities that are concerned about rising deer numbers and interested in reducing deer populations: Draper, Holiday, Provo, Woodland Hills, and I'm sure as we make news, there'll be more. It's becoming a big issue. I think there needs to be a fair amount of outreach on how to protect your yard and garden from deer, but along with that will probably be required a lethal and non-lethal removal methods to bring some of those under control. In our habitat section, we had a few fires that impacted wildlife management areas. The Anaconda fire out in Pine Canyon Wildlife Management Area by Tooele, 913 acres of the 3,500 acre WMA were burned. There are a lot of weeds on that have come back already. An herbicide treatment will be used prior to an aerial seeding and chaining to cover the seed this fall. Deep Creek fire down by Levan, 675 acres on the wildlife management area, and a fire rehabilitation project is planned for this fall also. For Upland Game, we've got some food plots planned for Salt Creek, Nephi, and the Steel Ranch. In Salt Creek, it's working with the National Wild Turkey Federation folks out of Nephi to benefit turkeys. Nephi, it's going to be pheasants and quail, and the Steel Ranch probably beneficiary there is going to be doves. Habitat section personnel are also involved with UDOT in a planning effort to reduce big game vehicle collisions along Highway 89 between Mount Pleasant and Ephraim, and that's ongoing. In our conservation outreach section, we rehired Tanya Kiefer as our wildlife recreation specialist. We have a couple viewing days coming up: Kokanee Salmon up at Strawberry on this Saturday, and Raptor Viewing Day the following Saturday. Our law enforcement section, we have field training continues for our new conservation officer, Lucas McTaggart. We have kind of a tag team approach to training involving Ray Loken and Troy Hammond and Brandon Olson. You'll get a variety of experiences working in three different areas with three different conservation officers. So hopefully by well into the hunts, he'll be able to be turned loose on his own and be well trained to deal with whatever comes up. Officers have been responding to numerous UTIP calls. Just a reminder that's a hotline that gets it's a contract, and our officers are notified through their communication system that they have BATPOT. Upcoming RAC and board meetings. The Wildlife Board meeting that will be taking on the issues that we talk about tonight is October 2nd. Our November RAC, where we deal with bucks, bulls, once in a lifetime, just the hunts is on November 6th. That'll be in the Springville Public Library. And then the Wildlife Board will meet on December 1st to take up those big game issues from the RAC.
Thank you, John. Most of you are here for the fishing tonight. We'll get right to business on that. Our first item, which is agenda item number 5, is an action item, and it's the fishing guidebook and rule R657-13. And we have two people who will be presenting to us tonight: Drew Cushing from the Warm Water Sport Fisheries Program Coordinator, as well as Paul Birdsey, who is the Cold Water Sport Fisheries coordinator.
I'm Drew, and Paul's in the crowd tonight. I'm going to be presenting. I'd like to recognize Roger Wilson. He's our section chief for aquatics, and Mike Slater, our regional manager in the central region. I hope you guys are excited. We get together once a year to talk about fishing instead of hunting, and for me it's exciting, and I hope you are excited as well. This presentation is broken into three parts tonight. We're going to go over just a brief discussion on the survey results that we started doing a couple years ago. Then we're going to get into the statewide regulation changes, and then we're going to get into the regional recommendations. So with that, I'll move right into it. We did the same survey. This is the second year that we've done this, and this is in place of the informational rack that we used to do. We just didn't get the attendance at that spring informational rack, so we moved to this format to bolster the amount of public input we got to provide us recommendation ideas, and then to bounce recommendation ideas off of the public. So this year it was open for about a month. We had just over 1,300 responses on 13 different questions. On top of the questions about the recommendations, the last question was just a write-in. How do you think we're doing? Do you have any ideas that you would like us to consider as well? And on that last question, 750 respondents chose to comment in that question. 294 of those comments were related to regulation changes, and the rest were related to management suggestions. The rest of those we handed off to our regional management folks and asked them to consider those recommendations. And what I mean by management considerations are, we want to see tiger trout and strawberry. We want to see, you know, brown trout over here or wipers over there. That's a management consideration, and we kept those to consider as management ideas. And then we chose to discuss the regulation ideas tonight. So getting right to it, the last question, write-in question, this is tell us what's on your mind. The number one thing that they chose to bring up was the stream access issue, which is about 5 years in the making. And this seems to be a continual interest of anglers. What they wanted was more access to streams for angling. And that just is a extension of a bill that was passed a year ago. Additionally, the second most popular response had to do with law enforcement, and they want more law enforcement in the field. They want to see more law enforcement. And then the last two I added were just kind of novel ideas that we thought to mention tonight. The one was no license for active military, and then no license for over 70 years old. The last one, it's going to take me a little while, but I'd like to get there and not be charged a license. Moving on, this has been a third year that we've discussed spearfishing with you. We've worked with a spearfishing group, which I'll discuss in a minute. We asked them, or this was that write-in, and so this was free of anything that we provided them. They would like, there was more comments on less law or less spearfishing. That seemed to be prevalent throughout the write-in comments. And then it was about the comments specific to less spearfishing were about twice the rate at more spearfishing. And then the last one is just a growing interest. There's a bowfish contingent in Utah that right now can pursue carp statewide. They last year approached the Wildlife Board for an allowance to take game fish. And that seemed to be, I know that they're an organized group, and that seems to be growing in interest. So I chose to mention it here. And then this follows a trend that we've been seeing since 2005. Anglers, they want more regulation. They've said that in our statewide angler survey. They've said that in the survey that we did. We hired a marketing firm to answer some questions for us. They mentioned it in there overwhelmingly. Same thing here. And I want to point out that anglers, when they talk about more regulation, their perception is that more regulation means more large fish. And that isn't necessarily so. And I'll point to some data that we have later in the presentation. Because indeed, if you have a water where there's too many fish in it to begin with, further restricting the regulation and further restricting the take often leads to lower growth, lower condition, and lower angler satisfaction. Okay, getting into the statewide stuff. Last year, there was a bill passed by the legislature to allow these catch and kill fish or fish with no limit to be disposed of at the water. In the guidebook that's out currently, we offer some recommendations on how to dispose of those fish. This is in response to you know, previously you couldn't dispose of a fish in the water. You had to take it home and have some beneficial use of it. As we know, in catch and kill waters, what we want is are those fish removed and removed dead. Likewise, we have situations where, like Lake Powell, where striped bass become overabundant, their condition goes down, they become inedible. It doesn't seem right to force an angler to take those fish home when you know he can't consume them. So we're just making an allowance for anglers to dispose of those at the water or throw them in a dumpster or dispose of them ethically in some other manner. So in this instance, we need to add some waters to those lists or to that list and add some species. So Blue Lake, and I'll discuss Blue Lake in just a second, but Paku were illegally introduced, and we would like anglers to be able to dispose of those fish so they don't return them alive to the water. Fish Lake, there's a management plan specific to Fish Lake, which we just finished. It's been an information item. It was a broad group of anglers and special interest groups that, and some actual county commissioners that took part in that group. Their recommendation was to remove the limit from 50 yellow perch to no limit, which is designed to double in an effort to thin the yellow perch out. They also are going to introduce a weevil that eats Eurasian milfoil, which will reduce the vegetation in Fish Lake, which will further reduce the yellow perch. The thought is yellow perch are a direct competitor with salmonids, and if you can reduce the yellow perch, you might be able to, you know, restore rainbows into the management of Fish Lake. One of the other fish that they've discussed in detail were kokanee salmon, which are a planktivore. In order to do that, and the thought of kokanee would be to feed the lake trout, which are a trophy component of Fish Lake. And in order to get the kokanee in there, they have to have some food. And if you can thin the perch down, you might be able to get that to happen. So the group agreed with this. In this instance, we'd like the people, because of the no limit, to be allowed to dispose of yellow perch in the water. Gunlock Sand Hollow Quail Creek Reservoirs in Washington County. There's a recovery program that's in place. We spend millions of dollars a year removing non-natives from the river system in the Virgin River. And yellow perch were illegally introduced there, and we would like them to be removed. They're prohibited to manage in those waters. As such, we'd like to put a regulation on them that's a catch and kill, but furthermore, the anglers need to be allowed to dispose of them if they do catch them. Okay, we were asked last year to explore an allowance for spearfishing at all waters that have catch and kill regulation in place for the species that have that regulation on them. We completed an online survey, and two of the waters had substantial support in the survey for moving forward with an allowance for spearfishing. One is Utah Lake for northern pike, which were illegally introduced. If spear fishermen would like that, we could, you know, certainly outfit that. It seems like a pretty hostile environment for a spear fisherman, but it was supported. The Green River was supported for burbot, and we actually asked GROGA, which is a Guides and Outfitters Association, which make their living on guiding anglers on the A section of the Green River. And as you know, the A section of the Green River is a hot spot nationally for fly anglers, and there is a direct competition, they felt, between that business and that interest in spearfishing. And so then we had three that were almost split 50-50 between support and non-support. And those are those three bass waters in the southern region, in the Virgin River Basin. We talked to Parks and Rec about this and asked them their opinion. They actually had a survey that beat us to it. Their survey was just targeted at anglers that visited those waters and asked them their opinion of spearfishing. State parks did not support moving forward with spearfishing on those waters. So because of the mixed the feedback we got, we're not recommending a change at this time, but we would consider spearfishing opportunities on a case-by-case basis. We feel that there's biological concern in some instances. There's also social conflicts that need to be weighed. You can't weigh them all at once, and so we're asking that we consider them on a case-by-case basis. Just to give you a little bit of detail about you know, where we're at as a state, six states, and we researched this over the last couple months, six states have explicit prohibitions on spearfishing statewide, so there's no allowance at all. 31 states allow spearfishing for non-game fish only, which means that there's no game fish allowed to be taken in those 31 states. One state allows spearfishing for non-game fish species, but only with a special license. And then there are five states, much like Utah, that basically, you know, if I interpreted their guidebook correctly, they take it on a case-by-case basis. And they allow spearfishing for non-game fish, but also for game fish, but only on selected waters. And we fit into this category. And as you can see from, you know, a standpoint of, or are we more liberal or are we more conservative, Utah is definitely in the more liberal end of the spectrum as far as their allowance for spearfishing. Furthermore, just to give you a background on where this came from, spearfishing pre-2008, they had a two-fish limit. Basically, they had a 1 over 22, 1 under. And what that allowed them was to possess fish that were illegal for normal anglers to possess. The most significant conflict that came up was in Fish Lake, where we have tiger muskie. Regular anglers could only possess one fish over 40 inches. But at that time, a spear fisherman could go down to Fish Lake and target two, as long as one was under 22 inches and one was anything over 22 inches. Both of those would be in conflict with the current regulation at that time for regular anglers. So we adopted a regulation change at that time with your help. And the change that was made was to allow spear fishermen to take fish, but only at the same limits and same regulations and same size limits as regular anglers. Also in pre-2008, 12 waters were open to spear fishing, and in 2008 we opened two additional waters. And since then, we have 22 total. And so we've made significant inroads in adding waters where they're appropriate. We would like to allow underwater spearfishing at one water. This is Blue Lake for Pacu. This is an illegal introduction. This is a lake just south of Wendover on the state line. Pacu are a relative of a piranha. They're not a meat eater. They eat plants. And those are grinding molars that you see in their mouth. They get quite large. They're in there. They're reproducing. We want them gone as much as possible. They're an invasive species and illegally introduced, so we'd like to allow spearfishing for those fish. Also, this last year, we were asked to consider an allowance for unlimited at-home possession. We asked that question on this survey we did this spring. There was good support for this change on the survey. However, we had a regional aquatic meeting where all five managers and the Salt Lake staff discussed these recommendations and the results of the survey. There are some issues, and our managers specifically in one region had issues with how this could be applied on some waters. They felt in the southern region that there's some harvest-oriented waters where people come from out of state. And tend to just target waters, camp out on waters, and could have an impact on those waters if we progressed with cold water fish. However, underharvest is a known issue at many of our warm and cool water fisheries. As such, at that meeting, we agreed to recommend a change for warm and cool water species. So you would have the recommendation is to allow at-home possession unlimited for warm and cool water fish. We would also recommend that we take 2 years to evaluate this. We have a couple creel surveys going on, one at Starvation that has trout and warm and cool water fish in it. We're just finishing that. We have one just a year ago on Willard Bay, and we can evaluate whether this impacts people's decision-making or their behavior on waters and whether it might or might impact those waters. In 2016, what we would like is to come back to you with a recommendation based on those surveys. And if we don't see an issue, move forward with trout at that time. If we do see an issue, we'll be cautious and probably won't move forward with trout. So in order to do that, there's a couple things we need to do. Warm and cool water fish species, this is defined in our guidebook. These are not trout, so that discounts whitefish, grayling, and all of the trout species. And then furthermore, we need to define where these can be housed, so where you can hold them without being part of your limit. We wanted to eliminate the possibility of someone going out and camping in a motorhome at Fish Lake for 3 months and having the ability to stockpile fish in a camper or an RV during the summer. So what we wanted to do was create a definition of what a permanent residence is. And so this is it. It's the domicile an individual relies upon for, in establishing residency for the purposes of this code. And that code that's mentioned there is the same code that you would use to get an in-state license for hunting or fishing. And so what that means is that where you live permanently is where you would have to have those fish stored at in order to not be part of your limit. Okay, moving into the region-specific considerations. Fish Lake, we had, and I've already discussed this partially, we had a management plan put in place. This was a result of about 6 months' worth of effort for a group of people that struggled with all of the things that are going on in Fish Lake. The thing that came to mind is people go there to catch lake trout, trophy lake trout, but when they get there, they end up catching yellow perch. And so there's a conflict between what's there and what anglers really want to target. So as such, the recommendations here are in support of that group. The one is to have a no limit on yellow perch, which hopefully allows anglers to feel free about taking more than 50 home. Secondly, there's a trout limit on Fish Lake now that allows one over 28 inches. We would like to back that down to 24 inches. The Southern Region in their surveys clearly noted that fish over 24 inches change over to a fish diet solely and grow quickly from 24 inches up to a trophy size. So the thought is if we can back that down, we can get more fish through that hurdle of moving on to an all fish diet and growing to a larger size to occupy that trophy size that anglers want. Lake Powell, right now we have a disposal allowance for striped bass. We also have a no limit on striped bass. However, according to the way it's written now, you can't use striped bass for bait or chum, but strangely enough, you can dispose of them in the water. So this is just doing what common sense tells us to do, and that's if you're going to throw it in the water, we want to legalize the thought to chop it up if you see so fit and use it as bait or chum. Also in the Southern Region, we put together a second management team down there to discuss the Boulder Mountain Lakes and Reservoirs, which is a really complex system. There's 80 lakes and ponds on the boulders. Previous to this effort, they were all managed in a special regulation that considered them all equal. And what this management plan did was break them down water by water and have different expectations of that water in relationship to what anglers want. And so they used this group, and so they created trophy fisheries, conservation fisheries, and basically harvest-oriented fisheries for different species of fish. And so what this does in the proclamation is it removes the complicated boundary description that's in the proclamation right now, which is about a half a page, if you can believe it or not. And even after you read that description of where that is, it's difficult to know whether you're inside of it or outside of it. And so, but furthermore, this restricts those waters or identifies those waters with the special regulations on them in the section water by water. So we have our species or our water specific section. It would take away the general description, general statements, and move those into the water specific section. We believe that this will give us greater management of those waters and actually do what the regulations are designed to do. So this is a simplification, believe it or not. Before, there was a huge closure on ice fishing on the boulders. Basically, you could not ice fish on the Boulder Mountains except for very few exceptions. With this change, most of the, like I said, there are 80 waters on the Boulder Mountains. Basically, all of those would be open to ice fishing except for this select group. So Beaver Dam Reservoir, Bullberry Lakes, Fish Creek Reservoir, Honeymoon Lake, Long Willow Bottom, McGath, Pacer, Pine Creek, Round Willow Bottom, Scout Lake, and Solitaire. So those would be closed. The rest of the 80 waters would be open to ice fishing in the winter. Oh, and I might add, the reason for those closures are those are really small ponds, and there's a thought by this group that an angler could get on there during the winter and target those fish and probably harm that fishery. The others that are open, it would be a benefit to have that additional pressure and additional harvest. Okay. Furthermore, in the Southern Region, Oak Creek Reservoir, this one has had a stunted brook trout fishery for years. There's two choices that were presented to the group. One was to treat chemically Oak Creek Reservoir and go in with sterile brook trout, which is definitely an option. Or liberalize the limit, which is now was four fish, and basically quadruple it, and challenge the anglers to go down there and harvest these fish and not have to treat, which would save us money. And if they harvest enough brook trout, could change the size structure of that fish, which would make those fish desirable by anglers. And this would be evaluated on an annual basis. Sand Hollow, this we talked about earlier in the other changes, but there's an illegal introduction of smallmouth bass. And currently there's a no limit on those fish, and we'd like to change that to a catch and kill. These are illegal introductions, and they are prohibited in the Virgin River and Santa Clara River systems. Also in the southern region, Aspen Mirror Lake, Duck Creek, and Duck Creek Springs Lake. There's been an ice fishing closure because of some access issues that needed to be negotiated between DOT, the Forest Service, and the Division of Wildlife. Those have been worked out. This was an assignment by Jake Albrecht, a Wildlife Board member, for 2 years running. We finally have those issues resolved. As such, we'd like to open those to ice fishing and allow that to take place. There's a couple of these. So this is Johnson Creek or Johnson Reservoir. We have Tiger Muskie and Johnson Reservoir. Currently, there's a size restriction on the size of bait you can use, a 1-inch by 1-inch square of bait. The thought was is that would prohibit or reduce the amount of deep hooked fish by using bigger fish. They thought that a Tiger Muskie would more aggressively go after a bigger bait, become deep hooked, and we would have delayed mortality because of hooking in the gills. There's some research, or actually extensive research, on the delayed or the effect of large and small baits on Tiger Muskie. This recommendation follows those studies. What we'd like to do is remove that and allow a larger bait, which, you know, is intuitive. A larger bait is harder to swallow, therefore, you know, more likely to get hooked in the mouth region, less likely to be ingested deeply, less likely to have that delayed mortality. Same thing for Bullock and Cottonwood reservoirs. We'd just like to remove that bait restriction and allow anglers to use a larger bait and actually encourage that. Blue Lake, we talked about Paku earlier. They're an illegal introduction. On all of our illegal introductions, we have catch and kill regulations on them currently. As such, we'd like to pursue a catch and kill regulation at Blue Lake for Paku. Bear Lake, this is merely bookkeeping, but it needs to be presented and needs to be okayed. Last year, we did away with our 2-rod permit in Utah, or actually July 1. So in Utah, currently, you can fish with 2 rods with your regular license. However, in Idaho, that's not the case. You need a 2-rod permit if you're fishing in Idaho. So on Bear Lake, where we have a lake that is in both states, if you're fishing in Utah, feel free to use 2 rods with your one license. If you're fishing in Idaho, make sure you adhere to their regulations. The Logan River, this is just kind of bookkeeping too. We've historically had a restriction on the Logan River. It's a 2-trout limit and with some other restrictions. There are 2 ponds there, Tony Grove in the first statement, and then down in the second statement, White Pine Lake. Those are more urban fisheries and more designed to have people go and use live bait if they so choose, take 4 fish if they so choose, and were never intended to be restricted by these limits. As such, we would like to remove them and allow them to have a 4-fish limit and the use of bait if you so choose. Southeast region, we have a new community fishery, the Knight Ideal Community Fishing Pond in Wellington. It's a really nice pond. Paul Burgey and I went by there this last week. It really turned out well. It is a community fishery, and as such, we have a 2-fish community fishery limit, and we'd like to pursue that here. That's the end of our regional recommendations. I did want to present some results from a survey we did. We hired a marketing firm, PPB&H. I don't know what that stands for. Hard for me to get it out of my mouth. But we asked them to help us understand our anglers so that we can better serve them. Our intent by these regulation changes and all of the surveys and aging growth and the work our biologists do is to provide the best resource that we can for our anglers. Part of that is understanding what our anglers want and desire and what will keep them coming back. And so we have anglers going out and using a resource, they appreciate it, and they enjoy it. So this is a question we asked: what's your priority in going out and selecting where to fish? And we asked the active anglers, those are the folks that buy licenses every year, the die-in-the-wool folks like myself, and probably the folks in the audience. Making sure there's good-sized fish is number one. And this follows some discussions we had earlier and our follow-up a little bit later. As you see, and that was the number one highest priority in where to go fish. There will be lots of fish available, it's fairly low. And then crowding is even below that. So, and then, you know, having the fish that you're seeking, you actually have a chance to catch, was fairly high. Lapsed anglers were really different. The number one priority for them is seeking a non-crowded spot, or crowding was an issue. We need to do some follow-up work, because I have a hard time believing that a lapsed angler, or someone who doesn't, you know, pursue fish like a lot of us in the audience do, that their definition of crowding is the same as what a lapsed and or what a active angler would be, because they don't have boats, or likely don't have boats. They're not fly fishermen, probably. These are folks that go out every year or two. We need to understand what that means so we could help solve that issue. For them, having good-sized fish was number two. And so this gives us an idea of who our constituents are. And the Division of Wildlife is doing a lot of work in age and growth, which I believe is the next slide. It is. On all of our major bass waters and a lot of our cool waters, we're doing age and growth. Age and growth is a system which allows us to look at and evaluate each year in a fish's life and how it grows, and then compare that to a national average. So what this does is it tells us where we're at and then where we need to be. Now, this graph is important not for the numbers, so leave those alone. But you have to know and you have to appreciate that fish have indeterminate growth, which means that where 201 meet, where 0 and 0 meet in the lower left corner, from there till the end of a fish's life, theoretically, in a perfect world, if a fish has all of its food and all of the things that it needs to do well, you're going to see a diagonal line through time, regardless of its age, through the end of its life until it dies. Now, this is Willard Bay. This is just an example of one. Now, what this shows us is that fish in Willard Bay, our major management fish, channel catfish, walleye, and wiper, grow really quickly through about age 5. After age 5, they completely stop growing at about 18, a little over 18 inches. And they stop growing through the rest of their life. Now, what that tells us as managers is that we have a forage limitation at that age and size. And it, whether it's a gap or whether, you know, whether they can't get it in their mouth, whether there's just not enough, really doesn't matter. What does matter is there's a limitation there. You can solve that one of two ways. You can solve that by thinning the fish out. And because in this instance, on Willard Bay, there's an excess fish of what I would deem a quality fish. So an 18-inch walleye is one where if you go out as an angler, you're going to take that home. And there's an overabundance of those. There's an excess of those. Because the more fish you take out of there, the better that curve's going to look, the better they're going to grow, and the faster they're going to be replaced by younger fish. This is one example of a growth curve. I wish I would have brought some of our bass examples, but it's the exact opposite. East Canyon's a good example in Pelican Lake, where the younger fish don't have enough forage at all. And so you see this line inverted, where you don't see any growth for the first 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And then after the excess fish die off, you see this growth increase where those fish actually have enough forage after the die-off. And that's due to an overpopulation of younger fish and a lack of forage of those younger, or lack of forage for those younger fishes or those smaller fish as well. And that's all. And I appreciate your time, and thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the RAC committee? Richard.
What are the native fish in Fish Lake? Which, are there any native fish in there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, the lake trout were put in there.
Yes.
But there were not any native fish in
there. There were originally. I asked.
What were they?
There were probably some suckers in there, I would imagine.
Really? Yeah, cutthroat. Cutthroat too. We had a pretty good population of cutthroat.
Cutthroat? Dolphin.
So how come we're not moving to that then, to that native fish?
It really ceased to exist years ago. And, you know, there's an angler desire there, I guess, is the simple answer. It's not a conservation water. It's a sport fishery. It has been for years.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I know the division did some perch transplant from Fish Lake to Yuba. Can you give us an update on that, how that's going, or the impact of that?
We don't know yet. John alluded to the fact that the Central Region is going to go out on a gill netting expedition at Yuba. It's the fall at walleye index netting in the end of October. That'll be the time that can be evaluated. There were 40,000, 35,000 yellow perch, 5-6-inch fish that were moved from Fish Lake to Yuba. And how those survived, the predation is going to be answered this fall.
So are you going to gill net for yellow perch, or are you just going to see how the pike are doing?
Going to gill net this fall.
Yeah. Any other questions from the rack or points of clarification? All right. We'll open it up to the audience. Is there any questions or points of clarification from the audience? Come forward and state your name, please.
My name is Joe Johnson, and I just had a question about the spearfishing issues. So as of right now, nothing's changing from the current regulations. Is that right?
That's our recommendation.
Okay.
Except for Blue Lake.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the audience? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close the question period and we'll open up to comments from the audience. I have three comment cards. Any of others who would like to comment, please bring your cards forward. We will first hear from Paul Drimmon.
My name is Paul Drimmon. I'm the represent the Utah Anglers Coalition. The coalition is made up of most of the major angling organizations in the state, including the Bass Anglers, Rocky Mountain Anglers, Trout Unlimited, Strawberry Anglers, Friends of Strawberry Valley, and Salt Lake County Fish and Game, as well as several commercial organizations. One of our purposes is to represent the interest and promote the aquatics in the state of Utah, and as part of that, on an annual basis, we work with the division making recommendations and what have you when they propose regulations, and there's a lot of give and take, and of course we just have regulate, we're just part of the process that goes on. And at that point in time, we reach a conclusion or recommendation with an organization as whether we support, whether we have a deviation, or whether even if it's an issue where we don't support something, we'll back off and say, give it a year to try and so forth. And I'm here just to say that we appreciate the work being done by division, and as an organization, we fully support the recommendations as you heard this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. We'll next hear from Joe Johnson.
The spearfishing issue kind of resolved. The question I have is in regards to tournament fishing, and it's really pretty simple. I've been a tournament director in southern Utah, heavily participated in tournaments throughout Utah, almost every water that's legal to have them. The question I have is something that's already taken place, and I would ask that it would be considered again, but more for the grassroots groups, and that is a tournament variance or a tournament certificate allowing anglers to weigh 5 fish on a given body of water as long as they're certified with an actual tournament. Let me give you an example. Last year on Utah Lake, FLW came in and held a championship event on Utah Lake, and they were allowed to weigh 5 fish, basically of any size. Well, the limit was 12 inches. They had to be bigger than 12 inches. But my question is, that flies in the face directly of what the regulations allow and what we have to do as grassroots organizations when we hold tournaments there. We have to have special weigh-ins and only weigh 2 fish at a time in order to have a tournament. So my question is why is it that we cannot apply for and receive that same treatment? I'm asking, not telling.
Joey, do you like to speak to that?
That proposal went through the Wildlife Board, as all variances do. That basically allows people to do something that's otherwise illegal. If they feel the need to pursue that in that form, that's within their right. That.
Well, okay. So my question is right now, we have to have a COR.
Registration.
Thank you. Sorry. Got the nomenclature, but we have to go through this process. And so my question is if we have a COR and we're willing to be part of the solution and not the problem, why not allow us or at least the process to be able to have that? Does that question make sense to you guys?
It does. Yeah.
So it's happened. That's my question to everybody is, if it's happened already, they received a variance. Was it just a money issue, or was it something else? Because it seems to me that there's differential treatment there. And truthfully, we'd love to have tournaments where we can wave high fish. That's long and the short of it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll next hear from Stephen Ross.
How you doing? I'm from the Salt City Bassmasters Club, and our thing is about spearfishing. If we keep letting these guys spearfish and taking trophy fish, we already have an out of balance of small fish in all the lakes, let alone water dropping. If they keep taking all the trophy fish, there won't be any fish in there but small fish. So we put more regulation on these guys on their kills. I just feel that we need to do that, or we won't gonna have nobody to fish.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll next hear from Quinn Woodmansey.
Excuse me, but I've been on there. I don't want to approach yet. There's no need for me to approach yet.
All right. Ryan, you're up.
Hello. I just came to talk about, my name is Ryan McChancy, and talk about spearfishing and whatnot. First thing I wanted to say was I think the state limit is already the policing factor on what fish you can keep in each water. So if I go to Deer Creek and I'm spearfishing or I'm hooking line, as long as I'm still allowed to go home with the same amount of fish, I don't really understand how spearfishing is more detrimental if I'm allowed to sit there and fish all day until I catch four big ones, and I take four big ones home. Or if I shoot four big ones, and I take four big ones home. Either way, I'm still allowed to take four fish or whatever it is. And then also, I think there's a lot more big fish in the waters that the bass anglers are concerned about. Being underwater allows you to see those fish, and there are a lot of fish out there. So I think just because big fish aren't being caught doesn't mean that they're not there. Sometimes difficult to convince them to eat. So I don't think just because you're not catching big fish doesn't mean spear fishermen have already shot them all. I can promise you they're still down there. And if you ever get underwater, you can see them. The other thing is once we reach our limit just like anyone else, and we don't take any more fish. So I think the limit is really what keeps us all in the same area. And I also think the number of spear fishermen is very small compared to average anglers. And if you think about catch and release, if a fish is hooked deep, their average are like 35% survival or something along those lines. So if I catch and release fish all day long and I deep hook 10 of them, okay, those are going to die. Or if I'm just spearfishing and I shoot four die. That's it. There's not any extra ones dying. So I think in that way, it's pretty controlled aspect. And I just want to say I like fishing with fly rod, spinning rod, with bait, spear fishermen. I like doing it all, and I really appreciate having that opportunity here to do everything because it's very nice. And I take home more fish when I'm fishing with a worm and a bobber than I do any other way, spear fishing or anything else. So I don't, spear fishermen, it's not like shooting fish in a barrel, I promise. And I just want to, you know, sort of say something to someone who's been on both sides. And I think if there's a concern that spear fishermen are taking a lot of fish, that it'd be really easy to monitor on like the fishing license. If the fishing license said, will you be participating in spear fishing? Yes or no. And you click yes or no. And then like after the deer hunt, when they call you, they'd be like, so where did you hunt? And did you have any success or what did you do? I think you could talk to spear fishermen about what they did and see what kind of numbers are doing what, rather than thinking just because I'm not catching a big bass, they're not there because they've all been killed. I think that's about it. I really like fishing in Utah and just want to say I appreciate fishing and all aspects of it. About it.
Well, thank you. As I read through the recommendations, I didn't really see any further restrictions of any kind on spearfishing.
Right.
So I think we're making progress for the people who really like to spearfish.
For sure. I just know that sometimes it's easy to think that the new people are doing something detrimental, but I don't think there's enough of us out there to do anything detrimental, and we appreciate the fish just as much as anybody else. So.
All right.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, I'm down to my last comment card, and that will be Ken Strong.
Ken Strong, representing Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity that I have at this time to address this RAC. Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife approves of all the proposals that has been brought forth by the division on this fishing, with the exception of we would like the trout added to once the fish get home, they no longer count on your limit. I know the division's worried about several of the reservoirs. One of them they mentioned was Panguitch. One they mentioned was Otter Creek. For fear that the people would fish out those two lakes on the southern region. That can't happen under the proposal of your primary domicile because those fish have to, a trailer isn't your primary domicile, a cabin isn't your primary domicile, only the place you vote is your primary domicile. And anybody with an out-of-state license, they don't qualify for this because they have to live here 6 months, and so that puts them out. One of the things they talked about was the brook trout in the Oak Creek Reservoir on the boulders. They want to raise the limit to 16. The reason for that is because there's so many brook trout in there that it stunt their growth. They're not growing. We agree with that limit. The question we have is if a person goes there and they stay overnight and fish 2 days, they are allowed to bring 32 fish home. However, once they reach their primary domicile with those 32 fish, they cannot go trout fishing again until they consume those fish and get them at least below the number of 8. And those, even if they had only 6 left, those 6 still count on their limit until, and they will only be allowed to catch 2 fish. And a different situation, but basically the same thing as Flaming Gorge and Strawberry, where you are allowed to catch 4 fish. There is no other limit than 4. So if you bring 4 fish home, say from Strawberry, you cannot go fishing again until you consume those 4 fish. So we use the primary domicile as an example, that just kind of puts it all into where it needs to be. They have to be your primary domicile. Now the survey that was talked about and that was taken, the majority of the people wanted the limits taken off their fish. once they got home. They were in favor of that. That wasn't a big majority, but there was a majority of the people that wanted that done. Right now, there's people we know that are bottle fish, have bottled fish in their basement. They have freezers with fish in it. Those fish technically still count on your limit in the state of Utah. So those people are basically breaking the law. And there's a lot of people doing it because there's a lot of people that don't know the law. And so bringing this in and putting the trout on it, those people will probably still continue to do it because they don't know what the law is. But all it's going to do is change the law to make it legal. And the people that are doing it are already doing it. In fact, there's in the last 30 years, 20 to 30 years, there's been three times where the division was able to enforce this rule of fishing your freezer or at home. Three times in 30 years. If we're going to have the law, let's enforce it, which basically it's unenforceable. So why do we have the law? The other statement, that people, or one of the things that people think is the more fish we have, the bigger fish we get. Of course, that's not true. That's shown with the Oak City Reservoir, that's shown with the Middle Provo, shown with some of the other places where the fish, there's enough food in the water to supply X amount of pounds of fish, whether they're big or little. So I don't think it'll hurt anything if we do this and put all fish, once they hit your primary domicile, no longer on the limit. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Are there any other comments from the audience?
Can I fill out a card?
Yeah, just go ahead and make your comment and
My
then fill the card out.
My name's Ron Weiser. I'm here for the Tiger Muskie. I find it funny that you're worried about mortality in Johnson's, but then you're letting people kill them in Fish Lake. I know you don't want them in there, but you really do want them in there. It's just a matter of time before we need to stick them in there. The percher, I mean, tiger muskie are great. They're going to eat those perch, you know that. And I think it's going to set a bad example for little kids catching all those perch and wasting them. I don't know how that's going to look. I'd rather load the tiger muskie in Fish Lake. The Joes. Trout fishing at Joes is really coming on because of tiger muskie, so. I just want to get that out there.
Thank you. Will you fill out a card, please?
Sure.
Any other comments from the audience?
Yes,
sir. All right. We'll close the comment period and bring it back to the rack for further discussion. And he's got his thinking eyes on.
No.
Okay.
What would be wrong with changing that total limit once they get it home, and once it's either consumed or processed, which would be either frozen or, you know, bottled, so that technically would not count against your limit? I mean, is that, why would that be a problem?
The answer is we don't know what effect this will have on some fisheries. And we do have what we consider a benefit in the warm and cool water fisheries. We like to put it on, use some creel limits that we just finished to evaluate the effect on behavior. And if it is going to be effective, because I think there's a problem here in what people are doing now versus what they may be doing when you actually tell people, you know, you have unlimited possession rights in your freezer, and we don't know whether people's behavior will change or not. And so to use the argument, they're doing it already, doesn't answer the question, what are they going to do when they actually know they can have an unlimited possession? And so what we're asking is just a two-year window to evaluate their change in behavior, if there is any. And if there's not, certainly, you'll move forward. It's the cautious approach.
So you're just trying to, right now, you're trying to kind of evaluate whether or not that would create a problem.
Yes, on the cold water side of things.
Okay, because I'm just thinking of when I grew up as a kid, I don't know how many times we'd have got, you know, breaking the law, you know. And we used those fish, but we froze them, and, you know, use them, but it's interesting. So, yeah, I'd like to see you go forward with this and figure it out, and if you can, if it works to change it, then change it. So,
any other comments or questions or
motion?
I'd entertain a motion.
Yeah.
Danny.
Motion that we support the proposal as presented.
A motion's been made by Danny. Your second. Got seconded by Chris. Matt, sorry. All in favor? Motion passes unanimously.
I think we all support it.
What I saw. All right, motion passes. Just a couple of quick reminders. That kind of brings us to the end of our board or our RAC meeting. A board meeting for this to make the final decisions on these is October 2nd, right here at 9 o'clock. The RAC meeting, the next RAC meeting for the Central Region will be on Thursday, November 6th in Springville. Meeting's adjourned.